Hello and welcome to a special red carpet edition of Center Circle Live.
Red carpet. Aren't they all special editions these days?
It seems like. I'm getting kind of bored of them, to be honest.
But we dressed the part for this one.
We did dress the part. We're fresh off the 2019 Canadian Premier League Awards.
Yep. Marty, Armin, and Charlie here with you, by the way.
Just literally 20 minutes ago, the show ended. We're now recording our podcast. We saw Tristan Borges, Marco Carducci, Tommy Wilden Jr., and a whole host of other important CPLers all in attendance. But I guess Marco Carducci wasn't necessarily in attendance, but he was there in spirit and in video. The CPL Awards, now done and dusted. We have found out all the results. We're going to break it down here for you today. But gentlemen, suit and ties and all, what did we make of the event today at the Gladstone Hotel?
I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. It was a good kind of way to cap off the year, a really successful first year for the Canadian Premier League, and kind of looking back on some of the players that maybe made the biggest impact that we saw.
One player in particular.
One guy.
Yeah, let's get right to Tristan Borges here because he's the main story. So already had the Golden Boot, and then Player of the Year in under 21, best Canadian under 21, I should say.
Yep.
Any surprise there?
I don't think so.
It's tough. It's tough, right?
So here's the thing. In the spirit of wanting to debate, okay, I will make this the case. I will just simply make the case that maybe the winner of the U21 Player of the Year should have the caveat that if you are nominated for Player of the Year, you don't get nominated for U21.
So here's the thing. It's such a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Who would
yep.
have imagined that the best players in the league were under 21?
Kids.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The best player in the league.
And you also think about if we did that, you could move Borges out of contention for that, and then maybe like an East Nongaro gets in a nomination, a well-earned nomination. There's many players, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a tremendous amount of minutes given to young players. We know Pacific FC smashed, the 1,000-minute barrier really quickly.
They hit something like
14,000 total minutes, but just across the board, every single team was playing their kids. And so Tristan Borges, naturally at 21 years old, started the season at 20 years old. Mm-hmm. He should be there because he's also Player of the Year. But I think, like some sort of promotion relegation thing, if you are under 21...
Pro-rel for awards 2020.
But if you are, in my opinion, nominated for Player of the Year, you should cede the under 21 Player of the Year to a new cast of potential winners, with the understanding that like your accomplishment was so much better than just being a young kid.
So
you know?
Yeah. So we should say that the other two guys nominated for under 21 Player of the Year were Diadine Abzi at York 9 and Taryn Campbell at Pacific.
Both super well deserving.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just made incredible contributions all year. I don't know if Borges wasn't in that mix. I don't know which one of them I think would win it.
It would maybe go to Campbell. I think
you've got to give it to Campbell.
Because he had 11 goals. Yeah. Okay, well, and for Borges, it was interesting when he went up for Player of the Year, and you almost kind of got that feeling from him where he got up and said, well, you know, what about your teammates, right? And Kyle Becker was also nominated for Player of the Year, and he basically said, this award should be him. We should be trading places right now, which I thought was a really interesting comment.
Yeah, it was really insightful from a guy who's not made a secret of how important Kyle Becker has been for him all season. Even on finals, you've literally just won the biggest championship of your life so far. Mm-hmm. And the first thing he does is go, like, Kyle was a huge mentor to me. Like, I couldn't do this without him. So clearly there's that mentor-mentee relationship. And it's a beautiful thing to see Tristan Borges acknowledging it as well. And a deserved win across the board, I think. Goalkeeper of the Year as well, given to Marco Carducci, a player who absolutely deserved it.
Let's jump right into that, I guess. So Marco Carducci, Nathan Ingham, and Connor James. And Marco Carducci also won the VW Premier Performer, which we'll get to later. But Carducci also seemed like sort of the front runner, and maybe perhaps another surprise. Were you curious to maybe see Nathan Ingham? I think he would be the next logical winner to that award.
I mean, I think that there were a lot of really great goalkeeping performances, I think, that we saw across the league. And I mean, Nathan Ingham was definitely probably a pleasant surprise. I don't think anybody really expected him to play the way that he did heading into the season.
Totally.
I mean, some of us didn't even expect him to be the starter for York 9.
Yeah, he wasn't meant to be, actually. When York 9 started the season, they had Matt Silva and Colm Vance. And I think Colm Vance who hurt his hand.
Yeah.
And because of that, York 9 did a little bit of looking around. They found Nate Ingham, who had put in his time at FC Edmonton, done reasonably well in the NASL. And they were like, yeah, sure, we'll give you a shot. then preseason came along. I remember even asking around when I was watching York 9 at preseason, I'm like, Nate Ingham's playing a lot of minutes. And they're like, yeah, we think he's our number one. Mm-hmm. So it took him no time at all to really establish himself as the starting keeper. Like, we had Matt Silva. That was our pick.
That's what I expected, yeah.
Well, let's talk about Carducci quickly. I mean, so many iconic moments. I think about, you know, the white caps, second leg.
Yep.
That was a massive. And same with the impact as well. He had another good game there. But, yeah, for me, just ends up kind of being, well, we should get in the premier performer as well, ends up with, I think it was around 77 points or something.
77.8 or something at the end of the season.
Above of Nate Ingham, that was at the end of the regular season. Yeah. And, yeah, he takes home a nice Volkswagen Jetta.
The Volkswagen premier performer was different from player of the year in the sense that all it took into account was the statistical output of an algorithm that took into account a whole slew of factors, weighted them accordingly, and then produced a average out of 100. So this was our player index. This was our premium performer. And I think it was not a surprise because Carducci has been leading the pack on that all season long.
Yeah, since June or July when he posted. Actually, we went back and saw all of each like game by game and week by week, and he had some like 98 points, like almost 100.
Yeah. So, but that's the beauty of it is premier performer is really your most consistent player of the year award. Mm-hmm. It's the award that's given to the player who's just constantly putting in good shifts. And truly, I don't think there was a player start to finish of the season that was better than Marco Carducci. I mean, Borges had really, really highs, but there was also a few games he missed with injuries. There was a few games that he didn't really do too much. I mean, those goals definitely helped, and they put him in that top kind of circle. But Carducci was just constant and well deserved. His reaction when he heard that he won the car was beautiful.
It was a nice chuckle.
Yeah.
Okay. Staying with cavalry, to me, maybe the most controversial choice here of the five awards or four awards, Tommy Wheeldon Jr. taking home Coach of the Year.
Not controversial. I think closest. This
was
the
that's
only,
fair.
Yeah. The only award where I think between Bobby Smyrniotis and Tommy Wheeldon Jr., it was hard. And actually, we can reveal, I guess, from having seen the final numbers just a few minutes ago, the vote was closest on Coach of the Year, more so than any other category.
Yep.
So
it's such a toss-up.
Yeah. It really, it's not even really a toss-up. It's that both merit it. Jimmy Brennan also deserves his...
Same thing,
I mean, I guess.
They both deserve it for different reasons.
Yeah. Right? I think the reason why Tommy gets it, and it's the reason why that, like, I think he deserves it, is just because of the fact that the accomplishment of winning spring and fall is a little is significantly, I think, more challenging than winning finals 2019. And while Bobby's team did a really good job tactically and defensively and in terms of game management on those finals and in actually just taking on Cavalry late in the season, like they won those games as well. But I think Tommy's ability to just be consistent and put on his style of play and perform, get those performances out of those guys. Nobody was really expecting Cavalry to win. This was supposed to be, you know, a team that was good, but I don't think was really being talked about like favorites. And then like five games into the season, it was pretty clear Cavalry was the team to beat.
Yeah. Well, and it also depends how you weight the Whitecaps win versus the finals 2019 win.
Yeah.
Some people would 100%, and it makes a lot of sense, value that Whitecaps win, two legs, same format, as being more valuable.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys would agree with this, but it just felt to me like Tommy Wheeldon Jr. was maybe more like front and center in Cavalry success. Like,
yeah, he's definitely like, more vocal.
Yeah,
more of a
Forge has like more, like they won with more kind of recognizable big stars. Like they had Borges and Becker the whole year, who kind of the attention was on. Whereas with Cavalry, I think more than any other club, they kind of played a very, very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
And even from the start of the season, we were like, they're playing this high press. They're playing this 90 minutes of hell that they keep calling it. And I feel like that obviously reflects a lot on the coach. And I think that's maybe
definitely
a reason that we kind of look at Tommy Wheeldon Jr. as this Coach of the Year kind of figure.
And forgive me for objectifying here. I've been watching, I've been listening to a lot of Call Her Daddy, which is an incredible podcast. Don't judge me. I see your eyes.
No. Absolutely no judgment. It's a great podcast.
He's a good looking dude. And I think that kind of helps. You know, he's been a figurehead, but he's also a very personable guy. He's a very public-facing guy in Calgary. It doesn't hurt when you're, you know, trying to, when you're, I guess, vying for an award, that you're likable, that you're presentable, that you're charismatic. And while Bobby is also, you know, a very respectable person, he's a little more quiet, a little more subdued.
Reserved, I'd say.
Yeah, he doesn't like the spotlight the same way that I think Tommy seems to embrace it. I don't think Tommy chases it at all, but he definitely embraces it. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a little bit of a difference when it comes to the vote.
We should talk about the awards themselves because we got to see them in the flesh today.
Definitely.
And also a fantastic video that, that you will be seeing very soon as the audience filmed in Cape Dorset with all the sculptors and all the artists that came together. It was a beautiful video.
That genuinely was one of the most special moments of our season. Like, I don't want to say that just because it was like a thing. There are a few moments that will always stand out. And I think once this video, once it's out, I don't know if we have specifically, but it shouldn't be too long. Once this video is out, I really encourage you guys to watch it, check it out. I'm sure it'll be posted on campheal.ca as well. You guys, it's beautiful.
It blew
my
mind.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a beautiful story of a community that is keeping a tradition alive of stone carving, but also a community that loves soccer. Mm-hmm. Which is incredible.
I didn't know that how big the game was up there personally, and it was eye opening. It was amazing.
Well, and it does remind us of that Copa 90 video. You should look that up while you're waiting for this one that came out I believe last fall, and it was going to like the territorial championships.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, they all play outside because they don't have the facilities, but the finals were in gyms, and it was kind of like futsal, even though they don't play that. And it was. Yeah, it is truly an accessible game, and you can see that in a place like Cape Dorset.
I genuinely think this is the first moment that I've seen from the Canadian Premier League that we set an incredible standard for the rest of the world. There's never been a league that has an award that I think does such a good job of integrating community like this. Mm-hmm. And it acknowledges something that a lot of countries don't acknowledge, which is their First Nations people. Yeah. I mean, that's... Yeah. It's like... The artist, one of the five or one of the six artists was actually
Bilal
in attendance
Akwetar.
Today. Yeah, he was in attendance today. And he gave a nice little speech about what it means to his community, not just soccer, but being allowed to, you know, express themselves this way to a new audience. He said he always wanted to be known for what he did because this is a passion for his, not just him, but his entire community. It was beautiful. It was genuinely a touching thing. And I really think and hope that the rest of the soccer world, the rest of the soccer community, Reddit R Soccer, I see you guys. I really hope that this is something that can catch hold of and take off because it deserves it. This was a beautiful award.
We should credit the other artists as well. We've got Petsula Quimrick. We've got Tally Luke Nuna and also Kelly Pal Etzelu. And yeah, again, seeing them, literally it takes you to their home, them making these trophies.
They all have different elements of this that they love. They love, like, they were showing where they actually get their soapstone and their marbles from, like, these shipping containers that come into a co-op. Like, it's just incredible.
We are now in our first CPL offseason.
Kind of, technically.
You know. What did you call that season before? It's not an offseason. There was never an on.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so why
Charlie,
don't we call that?
Never an on.
There
was never an on.
He's right. I'm on Marty's side here.
That's quote of the year on this
podcast. The first true off season.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's fair. So with the first true off season comes the first re-signings and signings as we see CPL clubs getting ready for 2020. What's your biggest re-signing so far, Armin?
Oh, man. Easton Ngaro.
Yeah, I think that's the one, eh?
Because FC Edmonton needed him, and they got him, and they locked him down quickly. And especially because, you know, I spoke to Jeff Paulus after they announced a few of their signings and a few of their departures, and they lost a good chunk of talent, Umar Diouk especially being one of them. But the fact that you got your best guy, just lock him down, and you build around him, that's perfect. And you know what? FC Edmonton, if they can keep a bunch of their bigger players, because physically they were quite an imposing team, if you can just find yourself a number 10, if you can find yourself a Manny Aparicio or a Tristan Borges or a Marco Bustos or somebody who has like playmaking abilities, that team is going to be scary.
Well, let's stick with Paulus and Amir Didic because he had a very interesting quote on campiel.ca about how, you know, he hasn't been re-signed yet, but there's potential interest from MLS, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's potential interest, but what Paulus said is if there is, he doesn't want to stop him.
Right,
and I think that's going to be a theme. We were talking to Tommy Wheeldon Jr. as well after the awards. He said the same thing. these, if there is MLS interest, they're not going to stand in the way of these guys, because that's what this league is for. This league is to elevate. It is to take our Canadian players and push them upwards. So, I mean, Amir Didic, if he's ready for MLS, which, you know, I think he might be.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
He's not necessarily unfamiliar with it, coming through Sporting Kansas City, although he didn't really play. He has trained at that level. He knows what that level is. Paulus figures he's ready. And if somebody else does from MLS, whether it's the Whitecaps, whether it's Montreal, whether it's somebody else even, you know, new teams coming into the league, I mean, that... that's another
Nashville, right? Yeah. And Miami as well.
Miami already interested in Canadian players. They've brought in David Norman Jr., who was at Pacific FC,
and as well as
Jay Chapman. Yeah. Well, so there's possibilities, and if these coaches are saying, if that ever like comes up, we're going for it. You know, we'll help.
Yeah, and maybe that's a pattern that we're going to see moving forward, because right now, like, Ryan Telfer is a great name, where he had a fantastic season. He was let go by Toronto FC, passed the waiver process, and is now a free agent. But, you know, you have to think about some of those players that are maybe haven't been announced yet. You have to think that maybe there is that opportunity, right? Yeah. And maybe that's a pattern we'll see for years to come,
Zlatan,
right?
Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
HFX Wanderers. Charlie.
For a best, like, a biggest re-signing so far? I think Cavalry's done a really good job locking down some of their guys. They've got Marco Carducci back.
Yeah, that's huge.
Although January hasn't come yet. So that's true. You can lock them down, but that might be the best move, because it's a good bit
you
of
get
business.
A transfer fee.
Right?
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, Cavalry kind of has already locked down a lot of the guys that made their first season so good. They got Camargo back on another contract. They got Ledgerwood on another contract, and Mason Trafford. So I think that they've taking care of business pretty well very early in this offseason. As we should also say, it is still very early.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of time left.
We're not at the window yet.
No.
Yeah, we haven't yet had a new signing to the league.
Yeah.
No.
So that may be coming soon before Christmas. Who knows?
I think we'll probably see a few in December, free agents or new kids coming through, maybe some of those U Sports draft picks.
Right.
But you kind of want to put those guys through a preseason first, so I don't think we'll see any of that. January, man.
Yeah.
It's the same everywhere in the world. January 1st Silly comes, season. And then it all opens up. We have the added benefit
we're
of
working New Year's Day, by the way. I'm dragging you in, Armin.
We have the benefit of we're in our off season, so there's no pressure. But there's a lot of teams that are midway through their campaigns in Europe and South America and all over the world. There's options, man.
Yeah, I personally think that Marco Carducci is the best re-signing, because he's a player that has a ton of value, is well known to Canadian soccer circles, and let's be honest, if he's performing and he's under contract and an MLS club really wants him, they're going to have to pay for him.
But that's the thing, they will have to pay for him, because Carducci is now a national team player.
Exactly.
And he's doing so by starting 30 games a year for Cavalry FC and winning a car. And winning and getting, and I mean, beyond the joking element of it, there is a very huge like incentive for him to stay, because, you could sign for an MLS team, but are you going to start? And if you're not going to start, are you going to get national team nods? And if you're not going to get national team nods, then what are you really doing? You know? So he has to weigh both. And we're in the fact that after the first season of CPL, we're talking about this, unreal.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to do a joke here.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Center Circle Data.
What?
Charlie did not like that one. This week, the Canadian Premier League basically released all of its data from 2019, something that was, I guess, somewhat unprecedented for other leagues. And we saw fans from across the country, nerds, I guess, really dig into this stuff. Armin, you're a nerd.
How dare you?
That's just not fair.
It's very enlightening.
It is very enlightening. It is also very complicated, but not prohibitively so. It was my bad, and actually I guess a warning to anyone who wants to download it, there is a glossary of terms which helps.
I did
so
not
make
know
sure that.
That
you also download the click through the glossary, and then once you kind of figure out what all the terms are, there is a lot of data, like a lot, and it's like broken down from player individual performances, player season totals, team individual and team totals. And anything you want, you can find. So Oliver Gage, who is kind of the person spearheading this project, he works for our soccer operations department. He came over graciously and kind of sat down with me and help me out a little.
Look like pulling teeth from my angle. Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Three amazing insights that I quickly, that we, he and I quickly found. You can check that out on campiel.ca. The article is there, but we can go over a few of them, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think the big story for me is Dominic Malanga. And shout out to Alex Shepard as well. He's a great follow on Twitter. It's underscore Shep. So he's out in Halifax, but he broke down the numbers and put expected goals on a graph. So that is, you know, the expected goals you are expected to score due
based
to the
on the
chances you create. It's pretty straightforward. And, you know, it's all on like a, it's a nice graph. Everyone, each player has a dot. And you just saw right in the top right corner is Dominic Malanga way out there.
Yeah, above and beyond most other players.
And that tells you that he should have scored more chances, but that he also created more, right? Which,
I mean, he created more, and it also probably speaks to the quality of the players that were serving him.
Totally.
Because he had really, really good supporting cast at in Cavalry with Nico Pasquati sending in pretty sweet crosses and throw-ins, I guess. And
every single second.
Yeah, and he had Sergio Camargo or even Oliver Minutel, like, setting him up.
And you know what? It just, I was telling someone today, it just backs up the eye test, right? Because Malanga, it was like, oh, he creates a ton of chances. Maybe he's not the best finisher. There's tons of opportunities I can think that he should have finished.
No, I would say he is a good finisher. Like, the fact that he finished below his expected goals is, you know, not ideal for a striker. But I think he was back like four goals or something, maybe five. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, it was five.
Yeah, like still the fact that the amount of chances that you have and that the fact that you can put them away to the double digit, Dominic Malanga is a great striker.
Mm.
And
oh, yeah.
What we're not saying is that he's not a good – wait, let me get my words right here. This data's got me all confused. We are saying that he's a good striker and he finishes chances and that he should have finished more. Not that he's a bad striker and that he's done above and beyond.
I mean, I can think of one in the finals that he should have scored.
For sure.
Yeah. Actually, there are two headers there.
He should have. That's the thing. That's the beauty of this data is objectively you can look at 300 different metrics and what they all kind of correlate to. And it works on the flip side. So Dominic Malanga, what we're saying is, there is even more room for more.
Yeah.
Which is somewhat similar to the other insight that I thought was fascinating about Mohamed Karuma over at HFX.
Yeah.
This is a guy who the data showed has been wasteful in his opportunities. He has been shooting and creating more chances than anybody else in this league.
But not
anybody.
Scoring.
But he doesn't score them. And when you map that out, Oliver mapped this out on a field where he's shooting from. And he essentially crossed this line and he said, Amin, if you want, tell everybody, tell Mohamed Karuma, anything below this line, anything from outside the box, stop shooting. Because if you just dribble a little more and you cross the ball into the box, the amount of chances you're creating for your teammates is so much better than any other player in this league that you can convert those into better chances. And conversely, if you shoot them, you're wasting them.
And well, and like you think about Karuma, and I always just think about him cutting down the line and delivering just beautiful balls that were somehow that were just like dribble past the back post. And every time you're like, oh man, that would have been perfect.
Someone
and you look at his numbers, and it was like, he should have had like X. He should have had way more assists.
Way
he
more assists.
And his chances created was I think it was better than anybody else in HFX.
That's the beauty of our soccer operations department is they look at things like this, and as a service to our clubs, they will coach the coaches. They will call up the coaches and say, hey, the data is indicating that this is an anomaly or this is something that should be addressed. Here's ways you can learn to improve. And I think Oliver told me when we did the story that players who see things like this shouldn't be turned off by them. This is an opportunity to be better.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If Mohamed Karuma comes back for the 2020 season and he has markedly changed his shot decision making to the point where he's no longer wasting opportunities, but instead creating them for his teammates, HFX becomes a goal-scoring team. And then the whole club fortune changes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the beauty of this. I really implore you guys to go check it out. Center Circle data, not Center Circle Live, but it is a Center Circle. That's kind of where we're all at.
Everything's on a Center Circle.
It will be a newsletter downloaded from your email, and it has all the links to essentially Excel documents. You can play around with it for hours. Go check it out, man. It's a really fun experience.
And we're going to close this one out here with a bit of a peek behind the curtain with David Edgar of Forge FC, Armin. You spoke to him at the awards.
So this is a little behind-the-scenes look. CPL Editorial, you know, we try to bank as much as we can because we want to provide as much content as possible. But, you know, we figured there was enough funny kind of comments and maybe some insightful, like I guess, replies that we figured we'd share it directly with you guys. So this is David Edgar right after the awards.
Interesting. I can't wait to hear that. Okay, we'll be back in 2 weeks for a club-by-club review, talking to all of our reporters from coast to coast. Then after that, we'll have our 2019 grand finale, the 2019 Ooh. Center Circle Live year-end quiz. We'll see you then.
You kind of came into the season midway through. I think you made a huge impact, especially at Finals 2019. Yeah. How was your CPL adventure? What was that like for you, even if it wasn't the full thing? And
yeah.
what was your season like with the CPL?
No, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, obviously, Canadian football in my heart has held a special place. Obviously, being a national team, being abroad for so long, but I to come back here, have the opportunity to, and to win the first ever championship was fantastic. I couldn't have asked for it to go any better. The hard thing now is to build on that and go again next year for every team, because everyone has seen each other. It's a small league, and so you have to go now and build on what you created the first season.
Obviously, a lot of success in your first season. Do you anticipate being back next season, or what are some of your goals, I guess, for next season? Besides, you know, just repeating, is there anything that you'd like to see from Forge FC or from the CPL?
Yeah, again, it's just it's about kicking on, and we had a good core group. Obviously, there'll be people coming and going, as there will be most teams, but I think Forge itself created an identity for themselves this year, how they wanted to play, how Bobby and the staff wanted to play. So we're looking to continue that. I don't think that'll change, whether I'm there or not. I don't think that'll change in the philosophy of what they're trying to build there. So obviously I'd love to be a part of it. If I'm there, I'm there. If not, obviously it's been quite hectic a couple weeks after winning the finals. So we've enjoyed ourselves, and now it's time to get back to work.
We've celebrated under 21 Canadian Players of the Year, but I think equally important to the success of this league was the other end of the spectrum, veteran Canadian players.
The over 31. Yeah.
The 031.
Yeah.
Can you maybe speak on that? You're not the only national team kind of established player. Yeah. There's guys across the league, Issei,
sure,
and Marcel
sure.
Dion.
Yeah.
There's guys across this league. How important do you think that your collective contributions were to making this a valid league in Canada?
No, for sure. I'm getting phone calls from players that I've played with in the national team programs who are asking my opinion, who are thinking, is it time? Is it right? The first year is under its belt. Should we do this? So it's an interesting prospect for national team players, or current and ex-national team players to come into. I did it because it was right in my time in my life, where I was with my family and career, obviously with the injury and whatnot, but you've had people like, I have to give someone like Nick Ledgerwood a lot of credit in what he's done in his first year, watching him. I mean, I was over in England while this season was kicking off and watching the work he's put into it. And a lot of people don't see what they do on the outskirts and the stuff they do in the community and those sort of older players. And the guiding of the younger players who have never played professionally is something that I think the league's brought the right veterans in, and I think that's key in bringing the right ones in. As I say, I'm just happy to be a part of it.
And one last question. The awards themselves, I think, are incredibly unique.
Yeah.
Something that celebrates Canadian heritage across the country. What do you think of that? I mean, you're Canadian, but have you ever seen anything like this before? What's
no, the video before about the awards and Cape Dorset was pretty spectacular. It gives you sort of an insight into the Canadian heritage and things you may or may not know about the carvings and things up there. And yeah, they're not the most generic awards that you would have in sort of other parts of the world, but they mean a lot, being Canadian awards and made by Canadian carvers. So it's fantastic, and I was really impressed with it.